for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. The U.S. and Europe began strikes against the forces of Colonel Muammar Gaddafi over the weekend. The aim of the UN-sanctioned mission is to protect civilians. Gaddafi spoke on state television and called the action, quote, simply a colonial crusader aggression that may ignite another large-scale crusader war. Joining me in the studio to discuss the Libya mission and its implications for U.S. relations in the Arab world, Madeleine Albright. She's chair of the Albright Stonebridge Group, a global strategy firm, and former Secretary of State in the Clinton administration. A bit later in the program, we will be taking your calls. First, joining us by phone from Tripoli is David D. Kirkpatrick of the New York Times. Good morning to you, David.
Good morning. Hello.
I gather that the four New York Times journalists who were captured in Libya last week have been freed. What can you tell us about this?
It's true they are on their way, as I understand it, to the border with Tunisia, which they'll be crossing over soon. They're in the city of the Turkish ambassador, who's kindly agreed to stand in for the American diplomats here who've left the country.
Can you tell us what you're seeing and hearing there in Tripoli?
Well, today it's sunny and bright and peaceful. The traffic seems to be going about its business. All the stores are open, but some appear to be. At night, I expect a third night of shelling. Last couple nights, it started around 8 o'clock. The first thing we see are barrage of anti-aircraft flares coming up from the Libyan ground, and it's not easy to see what they're shooting at. Last night, the most dramatic thing we saw was a bomb that exploded inside the Gaddafi compound, not too far from the hotel where they're keeping all of us. We heard the bomb go off, a cloud of smoke. And later on, our hosts, the Libyan authorities, bussed a number of journalists over to inspect damage that now appears to have been a kind of administrative command and control headquarters for the Gaddafi forces there in the compound.
David D. Kirkpatrick of the New York Times. David, I'm afraid the connection is not working well, so we'll have to let you go, but I so appreciate your joining us. Thank you.
I hope we can do a better job the next time.
I hope so. Thanks a lot. Turning to you, Madam Secretary, good morning to you. It's so good to have you.
Great to be with you, Diane, and I'm so pleased that those journalists have been released. I think
exactly.
That's an important part of this story.
Why do you suppose they have been released?
Well, I think that one never knows when somebody has been captured what the cause of the capturing and then the release, but I think partially that the Gaddafi regime is trying to gain support from the outside and make it seem as if they are normal, civilized, which we know, on the other hand, they are not, because they are trying to kill their own people.
There are some critics who argue that what the U.S. and the U.N. coalition are doing is too little, too late. There are others who say the U.S. is getting involved in a third war in the Muslim world. What is your opinion?
Well, I think it's very important to see this all in a very different context. I have been alive for quite a long time. I have seen, I think, some very major shifts in my lifetime. Not a lot of them, but some major ones. Obviously, World War II, then the end of the Soviet Empire, the coming down of the Berlin Wall. I think that what is going on in the Middle East now is on that level, a major, major game changer, where people felt that the Middle East would always be the same, that they were not ready for democracy, that they could be run in a completely different way from other parts of the world. And I think we've seen, as a result of a number of factors, which is the technological revolution, where people can talk to each other across borders, that there are also similarities in terms of young populations that are educated, unemployed, kind of the youth bulge, and that there is a viral aspect to this, that what happens in one country spreads to another.
And at the same time, it has been said many times, we don't know who these rebels are.
Well, we don't in different places. And one of the points here I think we need to realize, and I'm sure we'll be talking about other parts of the Middle East, each of these situations is slightly different. We do know in Libya, Secretary Clinton has met with some members of the opposition. President Sarkozy of France has, in fact, recognized them. But it is a group that has been pulled together in many ways by the desire to end Gaddafi's dictatorial, cruel control over them. But we don't know exactly who is who, but we do know that their desire is to have a different kind of Libya.
It's interesting to me that Secretary of Defense Gates came out last week and said we should not begin any military action against Libya. Then Secretary of State Clinton, who had previously agreed with that, apparently with the UN representative from the U.S., Susan Rice, and a third woman, persuaded President Obama that now was the time to go in. How do you see that?
I'm not sure I would put it all exactly the same way. Having been in a variety of discussions where during the Clinton administration we had to decide what to do in a particular place, Kosovo for one, what is an appropriate procedure, I think, for a democratic country with a democratically elected president and a huge responsibility is to have meetings in which people voice their views very honestly. I've often said that National Security Council meetings, the principal meetings, that the advisor, the responsibility is to get different views from the various secretaries. That's what the whole thing is about. And to get different views voiced, because the president is entitled and requires to have different opinions. So that's how the process works, and it goes back and forth. And there are really, we were involved in some pretty honest discussions and disagreements, and then you come to an agreement, and it's a human process of putting options on the table. Now, in addition to this situation domestically, what happens in the decision-making process, you have a changing situation internationally. And there was a hope for some time that the rebels or the opposition groups were moving along, that Gaddafi was not doing well in terms of maintaining control. There had to be discussions about what the appropriate approach was, and I would be willing to bet there was a lot of talk of going back and forth. I believe that Secretary Clinton and Ambassador Rice, and by the way, I had both those jobs, so I know what they're supposed to do, did a brilliant job diplomatically in getting support for military, this no-fly zone, which made it a much more tenable option and presented that to the president. So it's a combination of changing the international picture.
But don't you think it's interesting that the Secretary of Defense, Robert Gates, would have said this is not what we should do, and the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, said this is what we must do?
Well, without personalizing this too much, I had a similar discussion with Secretary Cohen. So I think that part of what happens is you're there representing the views of your department, of what you know about the diplomatic scene. And the truth is, Diane, this has gone way back. I have studied this a lot. And Secretary Weinberger, who was the Secretary of Defense, had a similar argument with Secretary George Shultz during the Reagan administration. So this is how the system works, and those kinds of arguments go on. And this is why it works, because the president is entitled to have the different views of his or ultimately her advisors.
At the same time, the president is currently in South America. Does that send a mixed signal?
No. I mean, I'll tell you, I think, again, one of the things, the president has, any president has a very complicated schedule. There are signals he sends if he has planned a trip and then cancels a trip. I think that we are, as Americans, the American country, our military, are involved in all kinds of things. As you pointed out, you know, we're in Afghanistan, we're in Iraq, now there's this. At the same time, the president had planned a trip to Latin America, a very, very important area for us, and sadly one that sometimes feels that it is neglected. And what happened is the president's main job, he has said over and over again, is jobs, jobs, jobs. And this is a trip in terms of trying to deal with the economic situation. I think it was a very important trip, and it does not send mixed signals.
Former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright. We'll take a short break. When we come back, you'll hear from Zbigniew Brzezinski, former National Security Advisor to President Carter. Joining us now is Zbigniew Brzezinski of Johns Hopkins University, former National Security Advisor to President Carter. Good morning to you, sir. It's good to have you with us again. Oh, dear. All right, we have lost him for the moment, but he will be back with us very quickly. Turning back to you, former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright, the story about Libya in the New York Times yesterday said that part of the reason for going in with the UN group was due to what happened in Rwanda during the Clinton administration. Do you believe that to be true?
Yes and no, frankly. I mean, I think that we have had a great advance in the concept of one doctrine, which is the responsibility to protect, which is that we do know what is going on inside every country these days. One could say that previously we did not know, and that if the leader of a country is not only not protecting his people, but actually killing them, that then the international community does have some responsibility to do something about it. There's no question that Rwanda weighs very heavy on everybody's soul.
And joining us now is Bigniew Brzezinski. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Diane. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. A former student of yours is here in the studio with us.
Yeah,
he's
very
big.
Good student.
I would like to ask you, you have said that there should be some U.S. military intervention in Libya. What's your assessment of the current operations?
Well, my assessment basically is that we stopped the worst, because the worst was an increasing massacre, and it might have gone to horrible lengths. We now have to define some positive goals for this enterprise, because otherwise we could get mired in a situation in which the country gets divided, in which there's a civil war, in which Gaddafi manages to mobilize a great deal of animus towards the West.
And before we get to that, do you believe we should have acted sooner?
Yes, if we could have had, it would have been better, much better. It would have been best if we acted in the first week, because Gaddafi was clearly on the run. Even Tripoli was rebelling. But we couldn't do it without international consensus, without an Arab umbrella. Unfortunately, that took more time than desirable.
And what do you see as the intent of this operation?
To be perfectly frank, I'm not sure that I know, because it's an operation involving several powers, and I'm not sure that we have yet defined clear goals and clear outcomes. In any case, I think even if we have, and we know ourselves what's being done, we need now to speak to the world more clearly regarding our objectives.
Madam Secretary, what do you see as the intent of this operation?
Well, I think it is very clearly stated in the Security Council Resolution 1973. It is to protect civilians. My good professor and boss made very clear it would have been good to get in there earlier with international support. But in order to get that international support, there really was very careful drafting of this resolution, I think very good diplomatic work, and to get the Russians and the others, the Chinese, to abstain on this. I think this is very clearly drafted that this is to support, to end killing of civilians.
Dr. Brzezinski, since the mission is to protect civilians and not to overthrow Gaddafi, what happens if he stays in power?
Well, that's precisely the question. You know, the killing of civilians might stop, so to speak, but if he remains in power, it could resume at any one moment. Moreover, it's likely that even then the situation will not be that clear. There would be some killing, but perhaps much less killing than was imminent. So we have to, I think, go back to the Arab Union and to the UN and seek some sort of a common stand regarding how Libya is to be governed, and precisely regarding the question of Gaddafi himself. My view, he cannot stay in power, because that will be a source of continuous conflict.
What do you make of the criticism by the Arab League that the attacks have gone too far?
I can understand that, because they are very vulnerable to the feelings of the people, so to speak, the masses, and the masses are probably quite ambivalent on it. But I think the Arab League has made a choice. I think some Arab countries are getting ready to participate in the enforcement of its rules. And I think we can still argue with them regarding more precise arrangements. For example, there should be some clear statement regarding the nature of the authority in Benghazi. Do we view it as a provisional government of Libya or what? There should be some provision for UN-mandated elections in all of Libya. There should be a common stand excluding Gaddafi, because he is the source of the problem.
Madam Secretary.
Well, I agree with that. And what's been kind of peculiar is the Arab League changed its mind a couple of times. And I think this morning they're basically back saying that this is a good idea. I don't like to make comparisons with other events like this, but what happened in Kosovo was that we had an air war, and Milosevic had been indicted by the War Crimes Tribunal. There has already been some sense that Gaddafi needs to be up before the International Criminal Court. But what happened was when the war ended in Kosovo, the air war, Milosevic was still in power. People forget that. And it was a year before he had called an election. He lost the election. We also had very tight sanctions, not just on him, but on his cronies, and did what President Obama had talked basically about tightening the noose. So there are various ways to tighten the noose. I do agree with Dr. Brzezinski that basically it is not a good sign if he remains there for any extended period of time, because as the there was a viral aspect to the democracy movement in all these countries, there's also a viral aspect to things going backwards. And so we have to be very careful how this is observed in the other countries.
Dr. Brzezinski, what do you say to those people who ask, why Libya and why not some of the other countries like Bahrain?
Well, because there's a question of scale. In Bahrain, what has happened is very unfortunate, and a number of people have been killed. But in Libya, you had the makings of a huge, blood-curdling massacre. I mean, just look at Gaddafi's own words and look at the belated effort to storm Benghazi. That, I think, is a totally, totally different level of violence. Beyond that, I think there is a larger international problem. If we don't deal with this effectively on the basis of UN sponsorship, on the basis of the Arab Union, if he's allowed to persist, we may get greater polarization. Look, for example, what another colonel said this morning. I don't mean Colonel Gaddafi. I mean Putin. Today, he, in effect, embraced Gaddafi's slogans about the effort being in some ways analogous to the Crusaders attacking Muslims. I think we have to be very, very clear in defining our objectives and particularly defining international responsibility for a democratic process. That gives us legitimacy. That can mobilize a great deal of public opinion.
Madam Secretary.
Well, I think that's absolutely right. I think the issue about the international support for this is very important. And it does have to do with this whole idea that you can't allow a leader to slaughter his own people, and that it is infectious if you allow that to happen. So I fully understand why we had to deal with Libya. Each of these countries is somewhat different, but the scale of what was going on in Libya is just mass killings, and that is unacceptable in the 21st century.
And finally, Dr. Brzezinski, will Gaddafi be held legally accountable for what he's done, in your view?
Well, theoretically, he can be, and I believe some steps have already been taken in that direction. But if I had to venture a guess, my guess is he's going to fight to the end. So he will either end up, if we waver, retaining half of Libya and be a source of major instability in the region, or he'll fight to the end and in the process maybe get killed. I think our objective right now, in addition to external use of violence, should be as much as possible covert contact with the Libyan military. Because the Libyan military want to preserve the army. They want to preserve themselves. And I think they can be split from him if they become convinced that we mean business.
Former Carter administration official Zbigniew Brzezinski. He was national security advisor to President Jimmy Carter. Thank you, sir, so much for joining us.
Nice to be with you, as always, Diane.
Thank you very much.
Hi, Madeline.
Great to be with you, Zbig. There'll be a birthday soon. Bye.
All right. And let's open the phones, 800-433-8850. Let's go first to Bill in Lewes, Delaware. Good morning. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning. I'm interested in the cost of all of this. And my question is, when can we expect Republicans in Congress and the Obama administration to tell the American public that they will raise federal income taxes to pay for the new Libyan war?
Well, I haven't seen any estimate of the cost, but I do know that obviously we have a tremendous problem with the budget and the deficit, and it is a subject that should be being discussed much more energetically in Congress. I think we're in a very strange position with these continuing resolutions. But ultimately, one of the hard parts is that we do need money for our national security, and hopefully the members of Congress will recognize that.
Former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright, and you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. And joining us now by phone is Ambassador Richard Haass, President of the Council of Foreign Relations. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Diane. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Tell me your opinion of the mission in Libya.
My opinion of what we're doing in Libya is, in the single phrase, that it is ill-advised. This is, to use terminology I am comfortable with, a war of choice. Our interests there are less than vital. We have a whole range of military options and non-military options, more important, other than what the world has decided to do. And in my view, what has been initiated is unlikely to bring about an outcome that is politically desirable. It's not clear to me where exactly this leaves us, no matter what happens, whether Gaddafi decides to comply with the UN resolution or not. I also think more narrowly, from the perspective of the United States, this is something of a strategic distraction. You were just speaking with Secretary Albright about the budget, and this is yet another potentially expensive military intervention with I think, very unclear prospects for success.
And considering expenses, what about Gaddafi's threat to go from door to door to kill or eliminate each of the rebels?
Well, again, one of the things we should learn in the Middle East is that bad situations always have the potential to get worse. And if you remove governmental authority, as we saw in Iraq, you can really, to borrow in this case from Shakespeare, let loose the dogs of war. And situations can unravel very quickly. And it's quite possible, I even think it's likely, Diane, that before this is done, some boots are going to be necessary on the ground. President Obama specifically said there would not be American boots on the ground. Well, that may be the case. We'll see. But either Mr. Gaddafi continues the fighting, in which case what's being done from the air will not be enough to stop it, or even if he were to comply and stop, there would be then potentially real vacuums of power. And the real question then is, who is going to provide order? And are we so confident that the opposition to Gaddafi is really benign? So I think it's more likely than not, if we are going to avoid an incredibly messy situation in Libya, that the international community, in one form or another, is going to be compelled to introduce ground forces before this is done.
Madam Secretary, your views on boots on the ground.
Well, I think before we get to that, let me just say that you and I were talking earlier about the fact this is not a simple decision. There is no question about that. We talked about how it came about in the Obama administration, that there was careful consideration. There are those who believe we didn't do anything early enough, and now my good friend Richard Haass is saying we shouldn't be there in the first place. I believe that, as I said earlier, that while things are somewhat different in each of the countries, that each one is watching what is going on. And if we are not capable of stopping somebody that is exterminating his own people, it will have an effect on other countries. We have to also understand that Libya is next door to Egypt. Egypt is clearly the strategically important issue here, but that we have to be worried about what the lesson is out of this. And I think this will evolve. And I do think that this is an interest of the United States and of, even more importantly, of the international community. And the way that the president has gone about this with Secretary Clinton is to get the cooperation of the international community, which is not something to be sneezed at.
Ambassador Haas.
I'd say two things. I agree, maybe three things, that Egypt is the cornerstone along with Saudi Arabia. But I actually don't think what happens in Libya will have much of an impact on our more important interests in the region. Gaddafi has been isolated from the region for years. He's not taken seriously. And the fact that the Arab League, in an unprecedented way, actually agreed to green light this sort of humanitarian intervention, to me, that underscores the fact that Gaddafi has virtually no friends in the region.
Ambassador Richard Haas, President of the Council on Foreign Relations, I want to thank you so much for joining us.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by American University, by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives at GatesFoundation.org, by the David Geffen Foundation, supporting the vital role of quality journalism in this nation's civic life, and by the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, a source for what works in education. Learn more at edutopia.org. This is NPR.
Why you are what you speak. Grammar grouches and the politics of identity and what we're really doing when we judge others for their mistakes, accents, or dialects. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. Welcome back. Here in the studio with me, former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright. Joining us now by phone from Iowa is Republican Senator Chuck Grassley. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning to you, Diane, and good morning, Madam Secretary.
Good morning, Senator.
So good to have you with us. Senator Grassley, what is your assessment of the Libyan mission?
Well, first of all, let me be very clear to you and intellectually honest. I've had a little bit of discussion with staff, and I listen to the news, as you probably do, and haven't had any of those secret briefings that we get on Capitol Hill from time to time. So my judgment is based upon the fact that we're doing what we have to do for humanitarian reasons because of the unpredictability of Gaddafi, and we're trying to save lives, and we're doing it in a multilateral way. We're doing it under the auspices of a UN resolution. We're trying to abide by the rule of law as much as we can. We're taking it step by step. I think there's going to be measured responses. I think that there's some criticism that there's not an end game that's been enunciated, but I think it would be similar to what we did in the Balkans in the mid-90s when Europe was not responding. There was genocide. We decided that we had a responsibility to make sure that innocent people weren't killed, particularly when it was just because of a vacuum created by the rest of the world, where we have a tradition of trying to maintain the rule of law and also maintain as much peace and leave people live their lives, you know. And that's what we're trying to do.
How do you think that the Libyan mission might impact U.S. relations within the Arab world?
Well, I believe that one of the reasons we're there, along with the U.N. resolution, along with NATO nations, is because the Arab League had asked us to intervene. We know over a long period of time that the Arab nations, the Muslim region of the world, have had a lot of questions about Gaddafi. I think they've signaled that they don't agree with him, want to get rid of him. We've had our reasons for wanting to get rid of him. He's responsible for the killing of a lot of Americans in the Pam Am 103 during the Republican administration at that time. I spent a lot of time asking questions. I got legislation passed so that victims of terrorism could actually sue for assets that were that we had control of in the United States. We all think that Gaddafi is an international criminal and that he ought to be pay for the crimes he's committed. Besides 103, there was the killing of American troops in Berlin. And I don't know that we will be able to get him, but if we can, we ought to. And I think the Arab world then, in turn, in answer to your question, would appreciate it very much.
Madam Secretary, do you agree with that the Arab world would appreciate it very much if indeed Gaddafi were out?
Well, I do. I think that the Arab world, and it's hard to kind of make it monolithic, but the bottom line is, as Richard Haas said earlier, the fact is that they don't like Gaddafi. They know that he has been a bully even towards them in various of their meetings. And I do think the statements that the Arab League has made were absolutely crucial in this whole operation. And I agree with Senator Grassley that which you must be surprised about, Senator, but I think that, in fact, we are doing the right thing here, that we can't stand by while people are massacred, and that we learned a lesson in Kosovo. The only thing that I would say is that in this case, we do have Europeans that are in support of all this, in addition to, obviously, the Arabs. And the multinational aspect of this is a force multiplier. I really believe that. So I think we're on the right track, but it's not easy, and it has not been easy in the decision-making process.
Senator Grassley, finally, the mission here is to stop the killing of civilians. But frankly, isn't it also to get Gaddafi out of power?
Well, the president said 3 or 4 days ago that he ought to be out of power. His Joint Chiefs of Staff said yesterday that wasn't sure that that was our goal. It surely is my goal and the goal of the people that lost all those lives on Pan Am 103, and it ought to be the goal of the entire international community to make sure that tin horn dictators who are obvious international criminals are brought to the court of justice.
Republican Senator Charles Grassley, he joined us from Dakota City, Iowa. Thank you so much, sir. Good to talk with you.
Thank you very much, Diane. Call again if you need me.
Thank you so much. And we're going to open the phones now, 800-433-8850. To Alex in St. Louis, Missouri. Good morning. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning, Diane. My comment is the reason Colonel Gaddafi is in power is because people support him. He's not going to go to anyone's house and look in their closet. He's going to send someone there that supports him. As it stands now, he's the only person pushing his political agenda in Libya over the media. He can come on the air and make threats or push his agenda to the public. I think the rebels need to have a voice. If they were given equipment to where they could broadcast over the radio, over television, and they have a spokesman that can speak well for them, that they should not follow this person. They should join the rebels and fight their own fight.
All right, sir. Thanks for your call. You were talking earlier, Madam Secretary, about the fact that in this whole technological world, things have changed. These rebels indeed do have some voice.
Well, they do, and it's very interesting. We don't know the extent to which the whole social media has gone through Libya. We certainly saw it in Tunisia and in Egypt. But what I find interesting is that the rebels are getting their story out. There are an awful lot of very brave journalists that are in there. What is interesting, and we talked about this at the top of the program, is why is Gaddafi allowing journalists in? What he thinks is that they will provide a story that is positive to him, showing, quote, the damage, the collateral damage and civilians. But the bottom line from everything I've seen in the reporting indicates that we are getting the story of how much suffering there is among the civilian population. But I do think that more needs to be done in terms of making sure that the rebels' voices are heard.
I asked earlier about Bahrain. Doctors now say they're afraid to treat protesters because of the crackdowns. What do you think the U.S. can or should do as far as Bahrain?
Well, Bahrain is, as we've said now many times, a somewhat different story. What needs to happen here is for the U.S. and other countries to make clear that the only solution to Bahrain is to have dialogue, that there are legitimate opposition leaders and that there is a solution to this through restraint and dialogue. I do think, again, that we have to make more public the points that you've just made, is that humanitarian needs are to allow people to be treated, and that the royal family there will be in a better position in terms of dialogue if it does not put itself into the position of being cruel towards those who have been hurt.
All right, to Cincinnati, Ohio. Good morning, Bob.
Hi, Diane.
Hi.
I have a question, but let me first preface by saying that I voted for President Obama because he said that he would not resort to violence first, that he would talk to these leaders like Ahmadinejad, Chavez, and I put Gaddafi in that class. So I'm very disgusted that the president has chosen violence first. But my question is, Muammar Gaddafi is the leader of the Revolutionary Council, but the other portion of the Libyan government is the People's Congress, which is elected every 4 years. And I want to know, where is the Libyan People's Congress in all of this? I've heard no media mention that it even exists.
Well, first of all, let me just say on the point of President Obama's choices, he has, in all cases, first offered the possibility of talk. And there were pictures that were on television of Secretary Clinton meeting with one of Gaddafi's sons. There had been a number of different attempts to deal with what the Gaddafi issue was before violence. And I think that this president has been exceptionally careful in not saying violence first. He has, in fact, been criticized by some who said that he was too slow on this. We just had some commentators on that. So I think he's been very careful, and has made that point to Chavez, to Ahmadinejad, that he tries the diplomatic way first, but ultimately he has to defend national interests and humanitarian interests. I think you have a very good point about the People's Congress. I don't think I'd venture to say that it was not a freely democratically elected Congress, but one does not hear much. And the problem in Libya is that there are no kind of intervening organizations between Gaddafi as the dictator at the top and then the people who really are victims of his ire.
Thanks for calling, Bob. Now to Duncanville, Texas. Good morning, Frank.
Good morning, Diane and Madam Secretary. I just want to make a comment that as I've observed the discussion within the administration, though some of it has been public, as a member of the public and the electorate, I've been very comfortable with the way the administration has facilitated that discussion. And I agree with Diane, what you said earlier, that the diplomacy of the three ladies, Secretary Clinton, Ms. Rice, and we ought to name the third lady, and I'm forgetting her
Samantha
name.
Powers.
Right.
Yeah, but their diplomacy behind the scenes and what they pulled off and getting the Arab League support and getting the UN action, I mean, that's just been masterful. And at the same time, I think that the position that Mr. Gates took was great. I was glad that he took that position. I didn't see it so much as an opposition to action. He just was, to me, attempting to make sure that everybody knew all of the ugly risks that were involved. In fact, I wish that the politicians would do more of the discussion, mm-hmm. those kinds of realities, rather than covering the discussion on ideology and platitudes. I thought his position was great. So I just think this administration should really get kudos for the process and the tactics it has employed in coming to, you know, this action has, you know, had the right amount of thought and action. And unless now we can just hope that the outcome is quick with as little loss of life and treasure. But I think I have been very comfortable with the debate. And
thanks for calling, Frank. And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Madam Secretary, views all over the place.
Well, I think that they are very legitimate views, frankly, because this is not a simple situation. As I said at the beginning, we are looking at this area through a whole new prism. It is not all black and white in so many ways and deciding that nothing will ever change. I think people that they do want to make sure that we're not wasting money or that we are not someplace that we can't finish. On the other hand, I think we do live in a global community, and we are also responsible for what happens in other places. I very much appreciate the comment from the last gentleman, because I think he got it in terms of that this is a hard decision, that the President of the United States takes spending blood and treasure very seriously, that he tries diplomacy, and that we have an international commitment to end this killing of innocent civilians.
We've had several emails and Facebook questions about why Libya, why not the Ivory Coast and other countries where civilians are suffering under the hands of dictators?
Well, that, again, is a very fair and difficult question. What is amazing is that the whole Ivory Coast story is off the front pages. Here in Ivory Coast, you had a democratically elected president, and the incumbent doesn't want to leave, and there's a lot of killing going on. I think that there is a hope that those are the kinds of issues that can be done diplomatically. The African Union is very involved there. But there's always this question of if you can't do something everywhere, do you do nothing someplace? And so we have to be able to develop priorities. This is a very high visibility problem where thousands of people are being killed. But this is a very, very difficult question.
You must have faced the very same kinds of questions while you were in office.
We did. And when the Clinton administration started, there were issues in Bosnia, in Somalia, and in Haiti. The part that people don't fully understand is how they impact on each other. When we lost people in the Black Hawk Down in Somalia, that made people think they didn't want to do anything anywhere. And then Rwanda happened. And I think if you talk to anybody that was involved in Rwanda, we say, why didn't we go in there? And yet these were the kinds of questions. What was our national interest? Why would we care whether there were people being slaughtered? So these are the issues that come up all the time and are the most difficult for decision makers.
Madeleine Albright, former Secretary of State in the Clinton administration, currently chair of the Albright-Stonebridge Group, a global strategy firm. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Diane, for a terrific interview. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.
Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Susan Neighbors, Denise Couture, Monique Nazareth, and Sarah Ashworth. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dory Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives, transcripts, podcasts, and CD sales. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow.org, and we're on Facebook and Twitter. This program comes to you from American University in Washington. This is NPR.